Accession number 23362, Reel 7.
That's Elaine Cheverton, Reel 7. So this is the base you're talking about would be Kure. Is that right?
That's right, yes. Which I think was the naval base.
And you were there before you went to Matsue?
That's right.
Matsue, right, where the Anzacs were loading, offloading the ships.
Yes, that's right, in the main port. And they very much appreciated the canteen. You know, again, a chance to have a bit of a chat while they were sort of having a break from offloading.
Was this your first meeting with the Australians and New Zealanders?
Yes.
You met quite a few different troops, didn't you?
I'm just stretching my legs.
How long were the Wasps in Australia, in Japan altogether?
Well, I came back in August.
Was that when the Wasps left, or did you come back?
I don't remember how many. Some did stay on for a bit, but there were about 8 or 10 of us who went back on that occasion. So it was quite an exodus, and I think that was, well, that was the, I know what it was, that was the official demob, but a few people stayed on a month or two longer, but that was the official demob date.
And you had to leave then, did you, or did
Yes, I think that was the end of the Wasps as such.
And your moves after that, you know, how easy was it to get back? Was it to the UK rather than India?
Yes, it was to the UK. My parents had retired to Dorset. And as I say, we had a month in Singapore waiting for the next troop ship. We went in a small troop ship from Japan to Singapore. And then... We arrived in Liverpool on August Bank Holiday Friday, I think it was. And we were then to get a train down to London, and, you know, that was everybody going their different directions and saying goodbye. And one of the girls had lost her, I was the senior person responsible, one of the girls had lost her luggage. And so when the train came in, and she'd already got half of it on the train that we were coming down to, from Liverpool to, but she couldn't find the other. So the train left without her. So there she was in Liverpool still trying to find her other bits of luggage. And there were her, and we brought a lot of things back with us. I mean, you know, trunks and bedding roll, and everybody had sort of 3 or 4 large bulky bits of luggage. And so I thought, well, that's all right. I'll leave it at the movement control office. And you know, thinking I was a Wasby, was being a privileged person and everybody rushing around to do what I wanted, I just sort of say, by the way, she'll be in on the next train, Miss whatever her name was, Wilcox. And, you know, would you take these bits of luggage? And they said, sorry, mate, we're full up. And go and try the civilian one, you see, and nobody, and the place was full of people in uniform, women in uniform, you know, we weren't anybody. And so then I went to the civilian place, and they said, no, and they, you know, if you're military, you should go to the military place. So nobody would take it, so I had to sit for about 4 or 5 hours on the platform with her luggage, because the others had all dispersed and gone, and we'd all said our goodbyes, until she arrived. So I wasn't able to get home that night anyway. The WRVS or someone found there were no more trains to Dorset that night.
What was it like being back in England?
It was very, very difficult to adjust to, because, A, I suppose, without realising it, we had been privileged. People were... You know, we'd all been friendly together and looked after, you know, both from the point of view of the Wasps themselves and you know, the army had sort of we'll find somebody to do it for you. And of course it was very bleak. There was rationing, there was clothes coupons, there was a general flat feeling after the war, and I didn't know what I was going to do or what I wanted to do, and my parents were finding it difficult to adjust, having had, you know, my father laying the fire and cleaning the grate and things, which I never would have thought he'd have to do. So it was, they were finding it very difficult to adjust, so it was a difficult time altogether. And I did a refresher course of this secretarial course that I'd done after school, and then I shared a flat in London with another WASB and got a job as a secretary to a doctor. But it was, and it was difficult, I think, in that it was difficult to describe. People hadn't known one's life, and it was difficult to describe it. It was a bit like the Forgotten Army feeling, you know, a bit like they felt that they were putting up with hardships which nobody understood because they didn't get a feeling of it. And as I say, there were several WASBs who then, including this Indian Parsi woman who'd taken her DMOB in England. Mm-hmm. And we used to meet and go to the theatre. We used to meet, you know, quite often to begin with.
Did you get together formally, the WASBs, after the war? You know, did you have a reunion? I was wondering about Nin Taylor and Lois.
Yes, we had well. We had a big reunion, I suppose about a year or so after.
Did you find the other WASBs had similar problems, you know, of adjustment?
I think so. I think it was very difficult for most people because it wasn't as though one was going back to a job that one knew. We weren't picking up something that was already... You know, there wasn't anything waiting for one. You had to then plan your life and see what you wanted to do.
It must have been very difficult for someone like Nin Taylor, bearing in mind, you know, her dynamism during the war. Did you get any sense of how
yes,
she was coping?
Yes, she did find it very difficult because she had been a powerful woman doing a lot, full of energy. And I think she couldn't cope with it, and I mean, she died most unexpectedly during an operation, and I've always had the feeling that that was the way she wanted it, really. She had I don't know whether she had a flat in Chelsea or it was one that she used to, I think it was one that she used to go to, but several times I went to see her there, and she certainly was she didn't know what to do, and she had, as you say, all this energy, all this organising ability, and all this, you know, way running the WASBs. She knew what she wanted, and she had very good ideas about things, and she would get them put through. And there wasn't anybody. There was no sort of work that suited her. I mean, she'd be somebody who should be running something, be in charge of something, and there was nothing available. And I think she was completely lost.
Do you think WASBs were given the recognition for the job that they had done in the early post-war years? You know, were any of you given medals or mentioned in dispatches? Were you...
Yes, I got a mention in dispatches. I sort of felt it was for long service and good conduct, really. I mean, as you know, the troops used to joke about coming up with the rations, and I think that was that she would have been given so many You can have so many mentions and dispatches from your lot, and she decided who should have them, but there wasn't anything special about it. Oh, I must just tell you one rather nice story recently. There's this organisation, which is not all that, only about 6 or 7 years been set up, which is for reconciliation with the Japanese. And they wrote to Sally and said, could somebody from the Wasbys come and represent the Wasbys and come to this dinner in this big hotel in Kensington. So I said, yes, I could go. And it said on the invitation, medals will be worn. So I wore my medals, you see, on the right side, you know, my left side, which is the right side for your own medals. But if you're wearing a relative's medals, you wear them, if they're not yours, you wear them on your right breast, you see. And so there were a lot of wives there, but they obviously hadn't been people who'd been in, you know, they were been in any sort of service organisation. And of course all these men in dinner jackets with their medals on. And I was sitting near somebody, he was obviously trying to make me out. And he decided that I was somebody's widow but didn't know about which side to wear the medals, you see. So he said, so you're a widow, are you? I said, no, I earned all these, and I had the mention in the dispatches bar on it. I said, I earned all these myself. He sort of looked at me. He couldn't quite believe that, you know, that I could be a woman soldier, as it were. I had my 4 medals and the mention in dispatches. And he was obviously trying to find some way of telling me that I was wearing them on the wrong side.
Were you given, you know, was appreciation shown to the Wasbys, though, by the army for what you had done in the war? You know, did you have recognition by the generals or Mountbatten for the service you'd given?
Yes, Bill Slim wrote a very kind and very suitable. I mean, you know, he said it in his own words very much, and Mountbatten wrote a foreword for. I think I don't have any feeling that we weren't appreciated within our sphere of work, and the generals who had been reluctant to be steamrolled by Nin were always felt afterwards that it had been a good thing, you know, it had helped morale, and that we had hadn't been a nuisance in any way, making any demands and put up with the conditions and so on, which we didn't think too much about. So I think I don't think there was any feeling that we weren't acknowledged and appreciated in our own neck of the woods, as it were. And we got lots of letters from troops who wanted to write to us and so on, you know. And I don't think we were in any doubt that we were doing a worthwhile job and had done it in a way that was appreciated.
You were saying when you were serving the Chindits that, you know, the great sense of satisfaction you had on that occasion, you know, it must have been a very satisfying day for you,
yes,
from what you've been saying.
Yes, it was. You know, we were going to be the last people that some people would see, and they would know that, although you never think it's going to be yourself. But it was us saying they needed a good send-off, and we'd be there to see them, and them feeling that people did care, you know. It was an imaginative sort of thing to do, really. I mean, the whole setup was.
Were people surprised to see you? Did you ever find that groups of men were, you know, surprised to see British women at the front.
Yes, when we were going up and down the Imphal Road and new troops would be coming up, and you would sort of, you know, they would see them sort of looking, a truck going in the other direction, and sort of say, they couldn't believe their eyes. And they were completely surprised. We used to quite enjoy that too.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Elaine, for telling me yet more of your WASP experience, because I know we already have some tapes.
Yes.
But thank you very much indeed.
It's a horrible job somebody's going to have going through it, all those tapes.
Thank you very much.
It's been good for me to think about it. Another thing of the austerity was the coping with the civilian clothes and coupons. And I suppose as a reaction to all the army uniforms and the drabness of life in England once I got back, I needed a winter coat, and I was determined to have it in red. It was most unsuitable, but I was determined to have it in red. That was my sort of, you know, trying to liven, brighten things up. And in the end I got it. It was not a success, but I'd got my red coat and made my point about trying to bring a little colour and life into what was really a rather grey and dismal time.
And quite a change from khaki and jungle green.
That's
well.
Right, yes.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Elaine.
Thank you. It's been a long... It feels good. I mean, you know, going through it.
I suppose it seems very vivid when you describe it.
Yes, but one's also struck by the gaps, you know, the names that I can't think of or where I went to next and so on.
A long
you know,
time
sort
ago.
Of, yes, it is a long time ago. It is a long time.